Hello, everybody. How's it going? Welcome to the Twin Towers, Twin Decades, this first virtual Zoom book launch. There's enough people non-muted now that when you clap, you actually can hear the clap. That's one of the things. I have a clapping sound effect now, just in case, because like when people read, everybody else mutes and then they're clapping.
Now, just when you just for to refresh my memory, if I look down and it says mute, that means you can hear me, right?
Yeah, no, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Good one. So yeah, we're here
If I put mute on, then you won't hear me. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
So we're here one day after the 20th anniversary of 9/11 on September 12th. I personally can't believe it's been 20 years. I remember, I'm sure we all remember it like it was yesterday. Yesterday I was actually reading my poem at a fireman's they had a commemoration at the East Norfolk Fire Department for the 20th anniversary, and it was a big ceremony. And then after the events, there was like a sort of a food reception, and there was a kid who actually went to my high school who was there, because they actually a bunch of the kids from the football team who were at my high school, Norport High School, actually were there for the ceremony. And one of them came up to me and was like, you were at Norport High School that, when 9/11 happened. And, I was like, yeah, it was like what we used to always ask, like, oh, you were like, in the city when Kennedy was shot, like in that, it's like, it's part of history now. And he's like, well, what was it like at the school that day? And I was like, well, there was a lot of confusion because first we didn't know what the motive was or anything like that, and that we just knew that it happened. They hadn't pieced together what, that it was terrorism or what the cause of it was. But then I'm like, yeah, but when you looked actually out one side of the school and you actually could see the smoke, he's like, you could really see the smoke all the way out here. I'm like, well, it's only 32 miles away from where it happened, and yeah, after a couple
Wow,
hours, it was high enough that we could see it. And driving home in the direction of home, I remember in the car seeing, like, driving sort of towards the smoke. It was kind of crazy. So we can't really overstate how that day impacted us in the couple of
no.
decades it happened. And that was kind of the theme of the anthology, the Twin Towers, Twin Decades, was not just the day itself, but kind of how the 2 decades that followed the events of 9/11 and how it slowly unfolded into pretty much the world civilization at this point. So that was kind of where we wanted to go with that. And just so y'all know, the book spent 9 days on the as number one in its category for a new release on Amazon.
Great.
And we're donating copies to, yay, unmuted claps. Yeah, I know. Like I say, well, I'm not happy for the cause of why the anthology was needed. It's it's nice to know that the book was well received. The topic was, the powerful poetry in here has been complimented quite often. And we're donating, basically every copy that was sold so far, we're matching a donation copy to first responders. I have over 100 copies now that are going to be going to the fire department, and also profits from the sale of the book are going to be donated to the fire department, so we can kind of do a small something for that legacy.
Great.
Yeah, and actually at the ceremony I was at yesterday in East Norport, because it's they actually have a piece of the Twin Towers steel actually that they got from New York City, because some of them were, pretty much everybody in like the surrounding areas. First responders were kind of, trucked in, as the days went on to kind of help with the efforts. And so every fire department that, took part in that actually got a piece of the Twin Towers, of the wreckage that they, kind of now have at their place. And there's a big memorial out there for that, which is very powerful to see. Like, just, it's basically just a steel beam, but it's like, wow, that was actually, in one of the towers. So it's kind of crazy. So, yeah, without further, oh, we got number 1 1 2 6 7. It's a phone number calling in. Who's that on the phone line if they're there?
Hi, this is Heidi.
Oh, hey, Heidi.
Sorry. Hi.
No, that's all good.
Somehow my computer.
I just like to know who's here, because when I call the readers, I just want to make sure. So,
Okay.
okay.
Yeah, my computer screen's not working somehow, so.
Well, that's technology for you.
Right.
I know. I have yet to be at a live poetry event and get up and like, hi, I'm here to read, but my face isn't working. But it could happen. It's like, and hopefully nobody's batteries run out if they're reading from the anthology. Hopefully the book battery is still good. So, but yeah, anyway, so without further introductions, I guess let's just get right into the readings. The first one who actually signed up in order, if she's okay with going first, was Lynette Esposito.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep.
All right, this is Lynette Esposito from Mount Laurel, New Jersey. I was teaching at a junior college when we were hit and had to dismiss all the students. with little explanation. And one of the things that affected me was how it changed the streets. So I wrote the poem, Dark Streets. Dark Streets. One doesn't know how dark the streets can get until all the lights are out. Shrouded with the dust of lives blown like fine powder over all the lampposts from a September breeze. Stillness follows as if time is paused, breathing in the unquiet silence that hovers, pausing the sound to come. Time is that powerful. Then the darkness lifts slightly. The wailing of the sirens and screaming comes. Time runs, streaks to the fires, to the rubble, to the bodies, to the survivors, and lets its breath free as it passes by. What can a person say in remembrance? I stopped to buy a donut and was saved. I overslept. I went to show and tell at my child's school. My mother called. The dust settles in the mind. The cremated disappear into urns and unmarked restless places. Monuments rise. Somehow all is well. Flowers begin to bloom. The streets are lighted. The darkness, like time, moves on. It is the way of unknown, unseen things that lurk just beneath the sunlight, casting invisible shadows as if monsters under the bed were waiting to come out.
That's the clapping sound effect I have just in case the clap's not loud enough because, you know, half the people muted. But thank you, Lynette. Next up is Megasood in the house. I don't see the name, but you never know because it doesn't always come through on the name. Nope. Okay, well, if she comes in later, we'll get back to her. Well, I know Judy's here, so J.R. Turek.
Hi. Thanks for doing this, James. I had my blankety blank high school reunion this weekend, and we did a school tour, and they actually have a piece of one of the towers, and we were the first people to see it. They had a display actually in the center. So it really, you know, remembering really was this weekend. So my poem is called WTC, and it works on the anagram of WTC. Do Tuesdays feel different? Do you stop what you're doing at 8:46 a.m.? Does the year 2001 take you back to that Tuesday morning when the first plane hit the North Tower, September 11th, 9/11, 9/11, dialed again, and 17 eternal minutes later, the South Tower is in flames. Watch towers crumble. Do you harbor barbed wire hatred in the stone core of your heart for foreigners, for strangers, for ways to consider retribution for the sake of pure anger? What has happened these past 20 years to divide us by race, creed, religion, take sides by occupation, by history? We need to learn from, but cannot change, where terror cries. Their control over us as in attacks, why tears cease? Their assurance they break us, make us fall to our knees begging, but we didn't. We grew closer in solidarity, stronger in resilience, determined to never, ever forget. And yet, witness trust change. Do you recall how we were banded in red, white, and blue stripes, unified in a field of blue together as a nation, us, loyal without factions, proud without fractions of dividing lines? What compels us to make heroes of the undeserving, to put platforms under athletes, celebs, politicians? Weigh the consequences. There are 2,996 lives mattered. Oh, say, can you see the 19 terrorist lives mattered? Where do we draw the line? When terrorists control our future, we concede defeat. Death is a dialect. Do you hear the pleas of the dead? Feel the wisp of angel wings rise? See the faces of those sacrificed for freedom? Do you see so many more brilliant stars overhead? Where's the compassion? What would we do if it happened again, again, again? What would we become in 20 years? What have we learned then and now? 2 decades evolve. We resolve to keep hands clasped in prayer. Hate dissolves in the presence of their absence. If we could ask and they could speak, would they want retribution 2 decades later? Would they care? Would they prefer we unite, fill the vacant space with a firmer foundation of hope and unity? Whisper, take care. Again, again, again. Whisper, take care. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. Yeah, I know, it's the Zoom thing we were just talking about the other night. It's like, hey, you don't get the same clapping energy back you get as you do at a live reading. But then again, I'm trying to figure out how many states we have represented here too. So it's like the pros and cons. I know when we did the Tiku reading, we had like, I think 8 or 9 states represented. So, and I could already tell like, here we've got New Jersey. We've got New Jersey. We've got Wisconsin. We've got New York, Pennsylvania that that I know off the top of my head. So. Next up, Dwayne Herman.
All right. Following on that note, I'm from Kansas, although I don't talk like that, but some people here do. I had just come back with my oldest son from visiting family in Germany back the week before. So I was instantly back on the plane that was being commandeered, and at the same time, my office window faced down the alley so I could see planes coming down the alley towards me. And I was still supposed to answer the phones and be coherent. And I saw in the break room, I saw one of the towers fall, and it took me a while to figure out what was actually happening. And then the supervisor came through and said, does anybody need to go home? And I couldn't even process the words. I just could not put it all together. But this is the one in this book, World Upended. Planes fell from the sky, deliberately killing thousands. I saw towers fall, unreal, impossible, yet down they came in clouds of gray, and lives changed, ended, and the world. Days before, days after, turning point into chaos, world in shock, the impossible, the inconceivable had what? Thank you.
Thank you, Dwayne. Yeah, I think, a lot of us can, mirror that fact of the, taking the mind a lot to catch up with like the what just happened, Like I said, there was a lot of confusion afterwards. I mean, actually, at my high school, when they announced it, they said a terrible accident had happened at the World Trade Center. They said accident. It's like, yeah, I think it was a little more than an accident. So next up, Emmy Sue Sloan.
Oh, thank you so much for having a Zoom option on this reading. I appreciate it. I was in the city on that horrible day. It was only my second day working in New York City. We had just moved into town, and we had a straight on view down to downtown. So I saw more than I wanted to see. But the poem in the book is a reflection on more current dissension and disagreement that has developed over the years. It's called The Writing on the Wall. Adverbs have fallen out of style, especially the ones ending in ly, with one big exception, faded into the ether like facts. Nouns and verbs survive, thank goodness, though they often disagree. Semicolons, long misunderstood, pop up in all the wrong places when they appear at all, leaving sentences to run on and on. We can only hope for a long dash to intervene, a chance to catch our breath, think for a split second before the words resume their tumbling, bumbling torrent, mixed up subjects, objects, questionable prepositions, open to wide interpretation. I've been dropping commas and periods lately. They skitter across the path behind me when I turn to see who's lurking. It's the question mark, silent sentry, calling me to face the chaos. What is happening? How did we get here? Will we survive? Does anybody care? Thank you.
Thank you, Emmy. And yeah, it's, you know, that was one of the major themes in the book, was not just, you know, the impact of the day itself, but how these two decades have developed and, you know, all the conflicting and contradictory emotions that we've all kind of felt in the way society has kind of ebbed and flowed since then. So yeah, there are exactly 50 poets in this anthology, by the way, just for those here. And just, you know, there were a lot more submissions than that. A lot of stuff was, you know, rejected because it didn't really fit the theme that we were kind of going for in the mission statement. So, you know, if you made it in there, just know you kind of, you know, went through the marathon. Next up, Donna Shear.
Thank you, that's me. I live on Cape Cod in Massachusetts. And on 9/11, I was teaching my kindergarten class. When I went home that night and I kept seeing videos repeat over and over of the towers being hit. And all I could think was those poor little five-year-olds, if their parents let them watch, they're gonna think we're being attacked over and over and over again. My poem is about a visit I had that winter after 9/11. It's called Ground Zero. Looking up, there was too much blue. Blue above, but below, steel-bellied cripples. One felled and twisted, a stroke victim lying on her back with her metal skirt ruckled up. Another leans, tender innards spilled, edged in widow's weeds, sprawled abject in an unchecked winter chill. All around, a dark carnival, crowded and blurred, photos and banners choking the church fence with emotion. Thousands of fervent paper cranes flown from Asian children on the wings of horror. Looking up, a solitary bird flies into the aching blue, and a man, eyes closed, turns his sorrow to the warmth of an uncertain sun.
Thank you, Donna. You know, about the repeating planes crashing, that actually was, you know, kind of true even for the high school kids at that point, because they kept, you know, we didn't have a lot of TVs in the school at the time, but because most of them were just like, you know, DVD, VHS players, you know, they didn't actually connect to the cable or anything. But when they had it on, they kept on showing, you know, the towers being hit over and over. And, you know, so it was like, I mean, I actually, you know, saw the second one hit live. But after that, they kept on, you know, showing it over and over, and people like, it was hit again. It's like, I mean, the one thing that's like, people are like, well, there's only two towers, so it can't be hit 20 times. But, you know, yeah, some people didn't kind of realize it was on a loop. So yeah, that's, if you're young, you probably didn't really see the differentiation. So that's definitely a, you know, a philosophical valid concern on that front. And yeah, I can't imagine what the kids were thinking then, like the kids younger than I was, because high schools is like, you're a kid, you're an older kid, but you're still a kid. So Next up he was at the live reading and now he'll be here at the virtual reading. Let's give it up for Doug Sweezy.
Excellent. Thank you. Congratulations again, James, on an actual storefront. That's incredible. Let's see here. I lost what page I'm on. I'm sorry.
95.
Awesome. Thank you. Here we go. This is number 1458, subtitled Proof. Your reflection is held in a placid pool, a glass mirror capturing us all, leaning over the marble railing of names to see ourselves with the departed one more time, sometimes eclipsed by shadow under an overcast sky, this tower of freedom. Angels traveled to warn Abraham's nephew Lot. God was about to unleash terror upon the excesses of the world. In the southwestern corner on the edge of the Dead Sea lies a pillar of rock salt, a tower known as Lot's wife. Marks all that is left where the biblical cities of Sodom and Gomorrah were thought to have existed, have been wiped clean off the face of this planet. Located in Lower Manhattan, taller than the last, we mark it here, though, a testament to will, to steadfastness, a tribute that it was not all for naught. This was not an exercise in power. This was not the capital of greed. This was an altar to one's own self-sovereignty. Its resurrection and a new structure is proof. It still stands. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. And thank you for the congratulations again. For those who aren't familiar, the live launch that we had was actually in the future storefront of the Dog-Eared Bard, which is actually the bookstore the Local Gems is opening. And it'll be open in a matter of weeks. Whether it's 2 weeks or 4 weeks, it's still being determined because there's, the landlord's fixing a leak in the roof. So Local Gems is going to have a storefront. And of course, we're going to have this anthology, for sale in the storefront. So that's been a lot of years coming. So thank you. Thank you again, Doug. Next up, Heidi Hallett. I think you're muted, Heidi. There you are.
There you go. Hello, everyone. I'm coming from Wisconsin here, and my poem is titled Ode to Brittany. And Brittany was the last surviving dog that worked Ground Zero, and she lived from 1999 to 2016. Dog of solemn search and rescue, remembered dearly still, harbinger of hope and closure through her soul and skill. Golden coat, retriever solace, remembered dearly still, for lifelong loyal service, for brave and endless will. Ground Zero, honored hero, sincere, able, guardian angel, back then and on the morrow, listen for that collar's jing jangle.
Thank you, Heidi. And yeah, that poem, I like the reminder in that poem that it wasn't just humans who were rescuers at 9/11. There were plenty of canines who were on the job as well. And, we owe them just as much gratitude as we do the humans.
Right. And that dog worked other disasters after that.
They bring a lot to the table. They, we can't really smell like they can. So they have the good sense of sniffing. So next up, Shirani Rajapesky.
Yes. Ayubuan, can you hear me?
Yep, can hear you.
Okay. I'm calling from Sri Lanka. It's 2 a.m. in the morning.
Wow.
And I'm really happy to be here because when the Twin Towers came down, it meant a lot to, it was a shock to a lot of us because we were going through terrorism, 30 years of terrorism, and to see this happening in another part of the world was in which is a huge shock. So I kind of felt what people were going through in New York at that time because I had gone through something similar where we were living. So this poem is called September. Remember, you said that day, people falling from the sky like stars, burnt out flares, unable to cling on. Fire in the sky, metal crashing above. Remember how you felt as you looked up at the heavens, the noise deafened, and the dust from the stars crumbled into your eyes. Horror struck, was this the end? Remember the smell, flesh, iron, roasting cheap like a giant barbecue in the sky, while all around the gray dust of construction falling like haze on an early morn. You screamed, but no one heard amidst the noise of a world gone mad. You cried in vain for what you couldn't hold, then forgot as the years flashed by and they made plans anew, leaving you out of it. No use to no one anymore. Remember how you forgot it all, buried in your life, the chores, the rush and swirl of work, the demands of modernity. Remember how she felt, falling, burning, crying. But do remember how a madman rose up in the sky one day to steal the future, leaving her with tears and nothing else except a few burnt out shreds. Remember. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharani, and thank you for being up, so late to be here with us. You know, that's so it's not just how many states represented, we're international today. It's also good to get the point of view of people who weren't, from like New York and America, like the outside opinion also of like what 9/11 was like for them. Cause I remember, a few years back, we kind of, when the Eiffel Tower was attacked in a terror attack, I remember here in America, we were like kind of showing our support for that from afar as well. So it's nice to, see the point of view of those who were showing their support afar, from afar for us here as well. Kind of, more the idea that, we're not alone, that, when these things happen, people kind of come together. So next up, we have George Schaefer.
Hello. I work for the federal government. I live in the Philadelphia area. I was at work when the attack occurred. And I remember I'm just doing my work. I was coming back, for my morning break, and somebody says, well, one of the towers got hit. And I'm thinking, well, that's weird, that they typically don't fly route the planes. Then they're like, the second tower got hit, and I'm sitting around like, uh-oh. So it was like a whole big mess before they finally decided to tell us to just go home. And I remember like when I left to take a bus to go home, it was a really beautiful day weather-wise. And it's just so eerie to go home and just sit there and put on the news and sit glued to it for about 3 weeks. And so the poem that I wrote, I've always gone up to New York a lot for different events. And I'd ride the Jersey Transit train and I'd be always seeing the World Trade Center from the train. And so that is sort of what the poem I wrote was about, Twin Towers. I looked for Twin Towers, train rolling on, passing through Newark, swiftly seeking tunnel, crossing into Manhattan, and Twin Towers still standing tall, welcoming tourists and thrill seekers into a city with no time to sleep. Until a day, smoke and decay entered. Implosions supplanted the skyline. Eerie train rides became the norm as Twin Towers disappeared. Rubble of long-lost dreams, images still sought but long vanquished. Just a dream maintains hope. Thank you.
Thank you, George. And, talking about like looking for the towers being there when it wasn't, and, that's, because the Twin Towers were such a staple of the New York City skyline for so long. It reminds me actually of a line from JG's piece at the live event that we had the other night where, it was a prose piece about 9/11, but one of the lines was, I'm hoping I remember entirely correctly, but it was staring at the mouth of New York City skyline without its two front teeth. And I was like, I've never heard it put quite that way before, but I think that really sums it up really well. So next up, let's give it up for Belinda Subramani.
Come on, thank you. Hi, so nice to be here. I'm in El Paso, Texas, and we're a very unique place in Texas. We're the most furthest west. It's a little slice. We're the only part of Texas on mountain time, and the vast, great rest of the state is on central. We feel very close to Mexico, which we are on the border of, and New Mexico is only like 3 miles away. Compare this to Dallas, 600 miles, Austin, San Antonio, 600 miles, Houston, 900 miles, and we're one of the most democratic spots in Texas. So it's really unique. Okay, on September the 11th, I was a full-time registered nurse working for hospice. And I was on call that week. So I worked a full day. And then being on call really means 24 hours. So for a week, I was working basically 24 hours. September 11, 2001. My day begins at 4 a.m. A patient has died. I go to pronounce. Humility and compassion is the mood. The knee stays with me. We wait for the medical examiner to call back. We talk. She seems even more polished and kind the more I get to know her. She tells me family history, shows me photos. She asks about me, learns how I became to be a nurse, that I was divorced but happy and somewhat fulfilled. Finally, the mortician comes. We hug goodbye. She adds a kiss on the cheek and I return it. Intimate, poignant death. I walk out into the sunlight feeling depth, satisfaction, compassion. A young man runs after me saying something about a bomb. I say, oh, someone made a bomb threat? No, the World Trade Center has blown up. And the Pentagon. Oh, it's a sick joke, isn't it? Listen to the radio, he says. They're talking about it everywhere. Shock, disbelief, unhinging is the mood. I drive to work puzzled and sore from death. TVs are blaring everywhere. Over and over again, planes fly into buildings. Everyone goes home by 2, except me. I'm on duty until the next morning, on call for the dying. I am alone. I cannot sleep. It's the longest night in history. There's talk of Armageddon and 5,000 people disintegrating with no trace. The shallowness of culture, habit, money, falls away.
Nothing is important anymore but love, family, treating each other well. Night passes with wavering uncertainty. This is the end of life as we've known it. It is the end of life as we've dreamed it. It is the end of our assumption of safety.
Thank you, Belinda. That last line, I think, is a great one, the assumption of safety, because there was definitely a before and after 9/11. And afterwards, I think, was when people didn't feel as safe. And so they started behaving a lot differently, both in some positive and some negative ways, So next, John DeSantis. John?
Oh, okay. Some reason, I don't know. So I'm hoping that I get through this okay. I am actually living in Northeast Pennsylvania, but at the time of the 2001 World Trade Center attacks, I was living in the Bronx. I was a semi-retired teacher doing tutoring on the side. And my wife was working in Midtown as a fashion designer, my wife, Abby. And my son and daughter-in-law happened to be over, and it was about 8:45 when the first plane hit the towers, and they saw it on TV. And my 13-year-old daughter was in school, and my son said, "Just leave her in school. It's safe." I said, "Are you kidding? I'm going to school to pick her up." So I got there, and she was in school on City Island, which is a little island off the coast of the Bronx, and 50 parents had taken their kids out of school before me. And so I brought her back. And as we went over the bridge in City Island, we could see the towers burning, a sight that we were to see for weeks and weeks on end. You could see it from, I was surprised, James, when you talked about seeing it from Northport. I didn't think you could see it that far away, but yeah. we were about 10 miles away. In any event, my wife, her friend happened to be in the city that day with her car from Pennsylvania. My wife left, I guess she left work sometime around 10, and it took them over 6 hours to get home by car, which is about 10 miles away. And they brought a woman who I guess had been babysitting her friend's baby with them. And she lived in Brooklyn, and we called her son, and her son refused to pick her up. So I wound up having to bring her back to Brooklyn, and the bridges were all closed. I have no idea how I managed to negotiate the bridge, the little bridges that were open, but I got her back to where she was, and that was that. James saw fit to pick this poem, and I thank him for it, and I'm honored to be in this anthology. I did write three poems about 9/11, the first one on the 10th anniversary, and then one very recently for the 20 decades, but I did write one right after the bombing in Boston, and this is the poem that I wrote, and I was kind of reacting to the fact that although they did plan, I happened to read about it recently, very rapidly to, do the replacement tower, the Freedom Tower. It took years before they actually broke ground and everything. So I tried to get that sense of that in this poem. It's called Twin Towers. Twin towers raised up from steel and grit, raised down from evil intent. Twin buildings erected long ago lay fallen in a field, fallow many years for lack of vision. Twin buildings, their demolition and demise has split the world in twain forever, a signal to the sky, an evolution of darkness. While all the while, Yeats's rough beast is slouching away from Bethlehem to multiply himself, a hydra of carnage, again, twin bombs in Boston blasting the beginning of woes. Thank you.
Thank you, George. And yeah, it's, I mean, John, well, I was thinking about it, George, while I said, whatever. Hi, I'm James. Am I?
That's okay.
What am I doing here? No. Yeah, I know, but we, it didn't happen right away that we saw the smoke. It took several hours, you know, through the day, but like by the mid-afternoon, or well, actually early afternoon, probably like about 1 o'clock, you know, we could see like, you know, the smoke up in there. And by the time we were leaving at about three, it was up there. That was, you know, it was mostly white smoke. There was still a little gray smoke because, I mean, there was a lot of burning there. But yeah, I mean, 30 plus miles away, and we could still see it. So, and you know, the point about the Freedom Tower, I thought was also good because it's you know, it took how many years to build the replacement tower, or how many years to build the first towers, and it only took a matter of hours to you know, have them come tumbling down. It's one of those crazy things about life where it's like, you know, it takes forever to build and very short time to destroy. You know, which is something, I mean, I, you know, in some ways, I think I think about that a lot whenever I see cancel culture out there. It's like, you know, a lot of, like, you know, just from tweeting and stuff, and you can kind of destroy entire things that have been created. And it's like, it's a crazy world we live in where we can, you know, people are encouraged to tear things down rather than to build. I think it's kind of very troubling in some ways. But Austin Alexis, you ready to read?
Oh, yes. I live in the East Village, and during the days right after 9/11, I constantly heard the ambulances bringing bodies to an armory that's in the Gramercy section. So that's what this poem is about. Chorus. One lone ambulance wailing through 2 p.m. sunlight, the day after 9/11, weighty with acrid odors. One lone afternoon on lower Manhattan streets as heavy vehicles emergency themselves uptown to a hospital, morgue, or armory, where nurses sweat among the dead while categorizing and storing bodies like folders in a file cabinet, folders of a precious archive, folders holding what won't be replaced. The streets and the globe teeter on an edge or a sill or a roller coaster track, too late to avoid or will away a plummet, too late to make a pact with peace. A single siren is too small to represent immense death. Or is it? One day is a trifle of an epoch, yet this afternoon continues for an age, for ages. This siren's moan is a refrain in a requiem that will sound around the globe and over continents of time.
Thank you, Austin. Yeah, one of the things I like about, you know, the various poems in this anthology is you're getting points of view from like a lot of different spots of like what the reaction was when it was happening, you know, some really up close, some a little bit farther away, some very far away, but like, you know, how it really kind of, you know, impacted everybody in different ways, but similar ways at the same time. It's, you know, sort of like what, like kind of like a satellite view of it. It's like, you can see what's going on here, there. It's, you know, and getting it from, you know, a bunch of poets' perspectives. You know, poets being known for having a way with words and being able to, you know, really get the emotions in there and really pay the attention to detail. You know, it's kind of telling the story, I think, in a unique way that you're not really going to get from, you know, news stories or things like that. So, Iris Levin.
Yep. Thank you, James, for having us all here together. It helps a lot. Thank you. Mine's called Change, and it's from the perspective of someone. Now, 20 summers have passed since the buildings fell, since the fire and smoke, since you died. 20 summers I wander the beach to look for the perfect shell that when held to my ear, speaks in whispers of you. Now alone I watch the waves break ceaselessly, like continuous misty memories of our time together before everything changed.
Thank you, Iris. Yeah, I know it's, you know, again, one of the things in the, you know, the book was the expanded impact that happened over a long period. So, Diana Richmond, I see you came in later. Is that you? Are you there? I think you're muted, Diana.
Okay, I'm unmuted.
There you go.
So much for doing this, and I very much appreciate being able to express a poem with this theme and to be with all of you today. I was actually scheduled to work at the World Trade Center on 9/11/2001, and a week before I changed my schedule to Friday, 9/14/2001. And it turned out in my role as a psychologist on that Friday and that week, and from then on, I was working with survivors and rescuers and the whole thing. And when in hearing about this theme, and if we wanted to write a poem, I thought at first I would be writing more directly about people and the emotional experience. But I had worked in the World Trade Center many years ago before this on the 72nd floor, and I could feel my body and the World Trade Center becoming one. It's as if I personified this, so it's very focused on the building. I didn't know it would come out this way until I put the words on the paper. It's called Twin Towers Twilight. So tall and tranquil, stretching up to the sky, sturdy and strong, star reaching and straight lined. Manhattan's handmade mountains, majestic skyline high and wide, monumental home for workers, modern castle viewed from outside. Escalators from subway to entrance, elevators to the panoramic view, establishing cherished memories, embracing the downtown we once knew. Interspersed with diverse working people, international and local firms, interdepartmental government groups, intriguing stores and state of art themes. Viewed as the center for world trade, visitors invited from around the globe value experiences of business and beauty, vicariously transformed by these towers of hope. Look up and see the Twin Towers. Wait, the image is just in my mind. These pillars of strength and security reflect a previous lifetime.
Thank you, Diana. Yeah, it's amazing how many people had personal connections to the World Trade Center. You know, there really were, a crossroads, so to speak, for lots of people, either working there or knowing people who worked there, or, you know, having some kind of connection to it personally, professionally. A lot of them, I remember at Norbert High School, again, we were 30 plus miles away, but there's still so many kids in the school who had, either parents or family members or somebody who were actually working either at the World Center or very close to it that day. So it's crazy. So, William Hayen, I noticed that you're in here. Do you want to read your poem?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'll even get on the screen here. I'm pretty awkward about this Zoom business. But anyway.
You're not alone.
thank you, James. And I'm glad to be with all of you. And I've cared for the anthology. Prefatory to my poem, let me say that back in 2001, when I was editing my big 9/11 anthology, I was in touch with poet Sharon Dubiago in California, and we sort of had this disagreement about just what was in the psyche of the perpetrators, the terrorists. She felt that in the main, they wanted to strike at our symbolic centers, the center of our economic structure, the Twin Towers, and the our military center, of course, the Pentagon, and that plane that went down in Pennsylvania was headed for Washington, D.C., probably. So Sharon felt that that was what they were up to. And I was very cynical, and I sort of remained that way. And I told her that I thought that if they could have, the terrorists would have killed every single one of us in the United States. So that's the way I felt about that. And this is the poem that came out of that about 20 years ago. It's called The Poison Birds. A robin whispered in my head, I want you dead, I want you dead. Though you're a man or child, I want you dead. A grackle squeaked in my head, I want you dead, I want you dead. Black, yellow, white, brown, or red, I want you dead. A bluebird sliced into my head, I want you dead, I want you dead. You're Christian, atheist, Buddhist, Jew, I want you dead. A hummingbird blurred in my head, farmer, teacher, nurse, and cop, Mick and Kraut and Spick and Wop, I want you dead. A passenger pigeon extinguished my head. I want you dead, I want you dead. Women who show your public face, you should be dead. An eagle taloned in my head. In Texas, Maine, or Tennessee, LA, Detroit, or bluegrass country, I want you dead. Who taught our birds Osama's song? Towers of fear fall all year long. Feathers of ash, could they be wrong? I want you dead. I want you dead.
Thank you, William. And, you know, I think that that as much as it's important to remember, you know, why we came together after 9/11, I do think it's equally important to remember that, you know, humans, while we have a very big capacity for love, we also have a very big capacity for hate. And it's, you know, we're very quick to kind of cut up the world into good guys and bad guys. But the truth is, we're all potentially good guys or bad guys. And really, we have to kind of be on a watch ourselves to make sure that we don't do, you know, become, you know, the hateful ourselves. And, you know, when I was in martial arts, you know, for, you know, many, many years and teaching, you know, women's self-defense, you know, one of the things that we always kind of, you know, we had to teach people, you know, relatively innocent people how to kind of see the world through the eyes of a predator, which isn't an easy thing to do if you're not a predator yourself, because most people out there are just going about their days and they, you know, there's certain things that they kind of take for granted, you know, like, you know, you leave something valuable in the front seat of a car, or, you know, you're walking in a parking lot at night, but you don't have like your keys at the ready or things like that. Like, it's because, you know, I had a sensei who used to say that, you know, like a predator, they may be stupid for being a predator, but they're very smart at being a predator. And so there's, you know, like it's hard for the average person to kind of look at, you know, the world through the other point of view. And so I think that, you know, your poem in that regard is, you know, it's a good reminder that that exists out there. So thank you very much for that. Nick, are you in your house tuxedo as well as your photo tuxedo? Are you ready to read?
Yeah, I'm all tuxedoed up. I'm ready to go. So I was also in high school, surprise, when the towers were hit. But unlike James and his fancy public high school, my school decided not to announce to us what was going on. They left it up to the teachers individually to decide whether they were going to tell us something or not. So some of the kids knew and some of them didn't. So I found out maybe about 11:30 when I was at my locker, and the kid whose locker was next to mine came over and told me. And this is a kid I never liked. I never got along with. I didn't really know very well and never said any word. He barely ever talked to me. And he said, "Hey man, did you hear what happened? Somebody just flew a plane into the World Trade Center." And I thought he was messing with me. It took me a while to realize that he was telling the truth. And yeah, just like James said, that the tone was really confusion. Like, what the hell is going on? And who, like, why would somebody do this? And who even is doing this? Because it took until we got home and were able to see on the news to really get some information, because nobody was really sharing anything. But like James also mentioned, everybody knows somebody who had some kind of connection to the towers. I mean, if you're living in the New York area at all, you know, you have, chances are, if you don't have a connection to those towers, somebody you know does. My dad was working upstate in Westchester and was stranded there. I think he got home around 4 a.m. that night. I think he might have had to take the ferry through Connecticut to get home because you couldn't get through. But somebody who lived down the street from me worked at the Trade Center. I think it was his wallet that he left on the train, and he survived because he forgot something, basically. And so this poem was sort of inspired by that. This is 11th. Married 10 years, finally arrived. The house, the kids, big job in the city. Up first, dress fast, beat the school bus rush, on a rail, ready, meetings all day, sway to travel's rhythm, write speeches in head, play scenes of success. Roll through Jamaica, panic sets in, gropes the empty space where the disc had been, no presentation, no meetings, no scenes of success. Sigh of frustration, go back, can make it. To car, upstream traffic, key in the door, warm embrace, hot tears, thank God you're safe. On the TV, the world changes, lives collapse, like parallel relationships, like looming dread of loss, like crumpled paper in a storm of smoke. Stay home today, love. Please stay home.
Thank you, Nick. Yeah, you know, I actually didn't know that at your school. They didn't announce it generally that it happened. I don't think you ever told me that.
Really? I thought I told you that.
Well, you might have. I mean, it has been 20 years, maybe at some point in there you have, but I didn't remember that for whatever reason. But
it was crazy.
Yeah, that seems almost like a disservice in a way, but that's a whole other conversation.
And we had TVs in every classroom.
Yeah. No, yeah, 90% of our TVs were just basically just to watch like DVDs or VHSs, because back then, you know, in the early 2000s, you had those combo VHS/DVD players because we were still kind of on the cusp of those. So
it takes the teacher 15 minutes to figure out how to work the thing.
Yeah, that was also a pretty important staple. So let's see, just going to make sure I didn't miss anybody here before I read my poem. Looks like everybody here did, but I'll ask it once. Did anybody who's presently here who wanted to read their poem from the anthology not get a chance to? Going once, going twice, sold to an American. Okay, so now I'm going to read my 9/11 poem. I actually wrote this, it took me about 10 years to write this after 9/11. I wrote this actually for my book, 10-Year Reunion, which, you know, was about 2014, because I was having a high school 10-year reunion, and it brought back like a flood of memories from high school. And I was, you know, writing stuff about, like, you know, like the clubs and this and that. And then, like, you know, it kind of like I got to that moment, like basically I started like in my senior year and started like meditatively remembering backwards from like when I graduated, heading back, you know, backwards in time all the way to freshman, kind of like I did it in reverse order because I figured the senior ones would be more fresh and I would just kind of meditate deeper back and back to the stuff, and maybe remembering some of the later stuff would kind of bring me back there. And so I'm going back from senior year, junior year, I get the sophomore year, and I get all the way back to the beginning of sophomore year, and that's when 9/11 happened. And I'm like, yeah, I really need to write a poem about that, because, you know, that was a part of high school for me for this book. So I wrote it, and you know, this is what came out of it. 9/11 as a sophomore. It started out like any other day. Second week of my second year of high school, second period, in fact, math class. Going through the anguish of trying to concentrate while still half asleep, not yet used to the early days again after summer. The announcement came in the last 5 minutes of class. Boys and girls, we've just received word that there's been a terrible accident at the World Trade Center. An accident. I remember that wording specifically. None of us really knew what to make of that. A moment later, the bell rang and I got up to go to third period business class taught by Mr. Campbell, the most laid back, hilarious teacher, only a few years away from retirement. And as a veteran of the Vietnam War, not one to take the silly dramas and trials of dealing with us teenagers too seriously. Upon entering the classroom, the television, one of the few active non-VCR DVD player only televisions that happened to be in this classroom where we normally had class, by pure happenstance was on, turned to the news. We didn't do any classwork that period. Watched the footage of the first plane, followed by the second one. Saw one of the towers collapse live. Saw a replay of the other one. the smoke growing and growing. We were all very confused. No motive or reason had yet been released. The casualty numbers were climbing. Two classmates from that period excused, sent to the office where they could make phone calls to try to find out information about their parents who worked in the city. And Mr. Campbell, standing there, arms crossed, shaking his head with a somber, sullen, saddened look that I'd never seen on him before or since. "You don't know it now," he said, "but this is going to be the day that will define your entire generation." I can only say, more than two decades later, how right he was. I can't tell if it's considered rude to make a clapping sound for yourself, but technically wasn't me. Yeah, I hear my voice coming through a second time by somebody who's not muted, so but that's okay. So yeah, that's pretty much the reading for the Twin Towers, Twin Decades anthology. So I thought the poetry here was very powerful. You know, thank you all for being here and for, you know, sharing your poetry. I would encourage all of you to, if you haven't already, I know several of you have, but if you have the anthology and you're a fan of it, as I'm assuming pretty much everybody here is, if you wanted to go on to Amazon and actually leave a review for the book, because there is actually a thing on Amazon where if you get a certain number of reviews, they actually start, you know, pairing it with other books and promoting it through their own volition to, you know, other people. And, you know, I think that'd be a good thing for
them. Excuse me, Jim, how do we do that to have a, make a review for them? How do we do it?
If you go to Amazon.com under the listing for the book, there should be an option to leave a review. So, and if you've...
Okay.
Yeah, especially for those, if you bought it through Amazon, it actually links you as like verified purchase, if you know, through your account, so that could kind of help. But yeah, so, I mean, you all can unmute now if you want to give all yourselves a round of applause for this reading. Yeah, there we go. Now I can hear it. So, yeah, thank you everybody again for being here. You know, this is a powerful reading and, you know, I think a powerful book overall. And again, I'm not happy for why the book needed to be written, but I am happy with how the book came out. So, unless anybody has any questions, comments, or concerns, I'm going to be ending the Zoom meeting here. So,
well, thank you again, James, for, you know, putting the whole thing together.
No problem. Thank you for being a part of it. You know, again, if so many wonderful poets weren't out there writing all this stuff, I wouldn't have anything to put into a book. So, you know, it's, you know, thank you all for being a part of it. I'd be sitting here twiddling my thumbs being like, how do I put a book together with no good poetry? You know, I guess my own book, but that takes too long, right? So, but thank you for your thank you.
Thank you, James.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Everyone else.
Thank you.
Everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep.
Everybody. Bye. Everybody.
Yeah, it was nice to be part of this anthology. Thank you.
Thank you so long.
Yeah. Thank you for being all the way from Sri Lanka.
Welcome.
Get some sleep.
Yeah. 2 a.m. I feel those hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's.
Well, I'm like a bat these days, so it doesn't matter.
So let's see, we had you know, New York, Sri Lanka, Virginia, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Texas, Massachusetts, we had an audience member from New Jersey, let's see, am I forgetting anywhere, Kansas, right, you know, so yeah, we had people from all over the place, so, all right, well, thank you everybody, and we'll see you for the next Zoom/live event.